Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Most Cape and Island students are enjoying their first days of summer vacation. While it might be a vacation from in-classroom education, curious and engaged kids are learning all summer long. Later in the hour, we talk about books and activities to keep kids reading this summer, even those kids who aren't bookworms. But first, we discuss cultivating children's natural curiosity and reminding them and ourselves that science is fun, exhilarating, and rewarding. Joining us is Christopher Reddy, oceanographer at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, parent and author of a kid's book about science. Welcome back. Good to see you, Chris.
Thank you so much. I'm psyched to be here, Mindy.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. And also with us is Elizabeth Doe, librarian at Mullenhall Elementary School in Falmouth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, thank you.
All right, Chris, this is the second book you've written in recent years. The first was Communicating Important Scientific Information in Times of Crisis or Emergency. This book is communicating to kids what it means to be a scientist. So explain why the theme of science communication resonates with you.
Well, I mean, I just love science, and I think that there's a big disconnect about what science is. You know, there's somewhere along the way we've thought that science is film strips and memorization and tedious exercises. And in reality, when I was communicating to people about my job and what science is in my first book, folks kept being really confused about what is science. And I really wanted to cultivate to people, and starting with kids, that science is about being curious and asking your own questions on your own time. And you have to be patient, you have to be persevere and open-minded. And I really wanted kids to recognize that you can be a scientist any place, anytime, on your own terms. And while it's great for them, the museums and summer classes and all these other things, I'd love the kids to be augmented by the idea that they do what they want and ask questions that matter to them.
Right. Elizabeth, what are some of the preconceived notions that kids have about science and scientists, and even who can be a scientist?
So I'm sure they're imagining, you know, lab coats and dissections. But what was great about Chris's book is that I'm lucky that I'm in a district where the library and digital literacy and computer science are part of our special rotation. So I see every kid every week for, you know, maybe the 5 years that they're at our school. And because it's the end of the year, I'm kind of, you know, wrapping up my statistics. And I realized I read almost 230 books out loud to all our students this year. Most of the time, I start off with a cover of the book or a picture, and I ask them, what do you notice? What do you wonder? And that's how our classes start. So Chris's book kind of really fit in with our school culture, my classroom culture in the library. Just to, you know, it's amazing what kids, when they're just kind of given that space to reflect, what they do reflect, you know, what they are wondering about and what they notice. So I think that we've been able to kind of combat that, you know, that stereotypical image of what science is, because it's so part of just their natural curiosity.
And they ask such good questions, right? So, Chris, this book does a good job of simplifying what it means to be a scientist while also pointing out that scientific inquiry can be broad, as you're saying, whatever they're interested in. So what are some of the most important themes you wanted to get across to kids about what it means to be a scientist?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted kids to recognize that being a scientist is asking questions and be willing to learn, and to recognize that they should do it on their own terms. And that, but it's, you know, it takes time, you know, that you have to be patient and you have to be persevere. But there's no failures. You know, if you're exploring, you're always learning, whether or not you get the answer or not. And I really wanted to drive home to kids that being a scientist is also being open-minded and be willing to change, and to really show to them how exciting it is when you learn something, or even better, when you tell your mom and dad about something that you just figured out.
And we didn't know.
Yeah.
I
think that being and teaching kids and thinking about science is one of the better ways to connect with your family, adults.
And one of the things, too, is, you know this as a scientist, you find the answer to a question and a whole lot more pop up from that answer, right? So it's kind of never ending in some ways. And sometimes it's accidental. You're looking for the answer to one question and you find the answer to something else.
Yeah, that's why I have my job. I mean, you know, that's the best part.
Elizabeth, Chris came and gave a presentation to the students at Mullenhall last week. Why are these in-person visits so important to the students, more so than, say, watching a video or a virtual presentation?
So I wrote a grant through the Falmouth Education Foundation, like this amazing group of people who the grant was to have an author come visit our school, but also to purchase a copy for every student to own of the book. So we had been looking for an author to like fit our school community. And then it just so happened that Chris wrote this book and had reached out to my principal. And it was a really great fit. And it was so important for kids to just see that the people who are behind these books are real. And what was amazing about our event was that the afterwards, they just kind of grouped around him and just wanted to talk to him, which was really amazing.
What were some of the things you heard from the kids last week about science or scientists that surprised you?
I think the kids, what I got the most out of was that they, all these kids wanted to tell me about what their experiments were. And wanted to tell me that their parents were scientists. And I look at all that and I always say that this is a place where I can build a common bond. And we always want to have shared interests. But I think the best part about this was two things. One, for the first time in my life, I'm a rock star because I was at Ben and Bill's last week and the kids pulling on the mother shirt saying that he's the author. He's the
there
author.
He is.
And I was someplace else. And I'm suddenly famous after being a scientist for 30 years. But the even better part of this whole event was that I've given hundreds of lectures. And the best time ever was because my two kids introduced me.
Oh, how
and
cool
I didn't
that?
Cry beforehand.
And they wrote their own introduction.
I
worked
so
with them,
great.
And it was all theirs. So it was,
you know, it happened at Mullen Hall. I have to say, my grandson goes to T Ticket, and they had this great, you know, the PTO puts together these before and after school extracurricular activities. And they had a program where scientists from the different institutions were coming. I think it was 6 or 8 Mondays after school. And of course, you know, my would-be scientist signed up for that. And he loved it, but some neighborhood kids didn't love it so much because they thought it was going to be hands-on experiments, and that isn't what it was. But he loved every scientist that came in, and you know, it was a lot of marine biology, which he loves. And so, I mean, it's great that we live here where we have all of these great, and you're a parent, and many of the other scientists here, and so parents, and they visit the different schools and talk to the kids, and so we're very lucky to have that opportunity. And Elizabeth, many of the themes in this book go beyond science. And I'm thinking the passage Chris just touched on, you might not succeed, but you won't fail. Mm-hmm. Such a great message. Reminds us that it might take a scientist multiple tries, right, to get something right or to find the answer. It also reminds me of the growth mindset practice that many elementary schools are using, honing those skills of perseverance, grit, tenacity. Would you talk more about helping kids explore these ideas and hone these skills?
Well, I was thinking how this year we circulated, I think, over 11,000 books in our school library. And I was reading this quote recently from Adam Ruman, a children's author, who said the library is kind of the one place or the one room in a school where kids can choose what they want to learn. So I think about, you know, that was 11,000 choices that were made this year. I think almost half is nonfiction mm-hmm. on our circulation. And I've come from a higher ed background. I was in, you know, a librarian in higher ed for like 20 years. And inevitably, the research 101 assignment would come up and students would have the choice of anything they want to research and write about. And they get stuck. And I'm really strong proponent of the, you know, asking questions. Like when you're stuck, think of something that you like and ask as many questions as you can possibly think of, because it's going to take you down a road where you didn't think you were going.
Mm-hmm. What age group is this book aimed at?
You know, it was age group for 5 through 9, but I've heard a lot of people who've read it said they want to give it to their next door neighbor. because it, especially the part about being open-minded and maybe willing to change mm-hmm. your mind.
Yeah.
So yeah, 5 to 9, but anybody's welcome to read it.
In elementary, middle school, there are often more opportunities for like fun hands-on science like my neighbor's kids were looking for, you know, the baking soda and vinegar, powdered rockets. But as kids get older, science becomes a little more textbook. Chris, in the book, you talk about science as a way to explore what interests us personally, what we're curious about. Is it a challenge to give kids this latitude to explore science that interests them when they're trying to meet curriculum and test standards?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a place, of course, for educating our students for, you know, in the way in biology and chemistry and physics. I tend to think of my book as augmenting that and, you know, just letting folks know that to be curious and to answer the questions that matter to them. And, you know, you don't have to be and go into a career of science to be a scientist. You just have to be curious and want to explore.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that, Elizabeth?
I fully agree. And I think that's what's so great about this book, too. It's also just showing that sometimes you're never going to find the answer.
Right.
But that's okay.
Yeah. The one thing that popped out at me was patience. That's hard for young kids.
Yeah. I mean, you know, no thanks to Steve Jobs, you know, with the iPhone and Wikipedia, where, you know, we live in a world where if you have an answer, you're going to get it in 4 seconds. And it's supposed to be certain. And, you know, that's not how science works. Yeah. You know, science is incremental and ever expanding. But it's so much more fun.
Yeah.
It's a great journey.
What did the kids say after Chris was there? I was talking about walking around town being a rock star. What were you getting for feedback?
Oh, they were asking about, you know, when is he coming back? they were so excited to get his book. And what was amazing is that Chris personalized each book to the students. So I think, you know, it's so important that they own their own copy of it and have it. But the fact that their name is in it, it's this moment where they're seen, they exist, they are recognized by this person that came and saw them, so or read to them. So that, I think, was such a meaningful experience.
Did you know you wanted to be a scientist when you were a kid?
Yes.
You did. How, do you remember how old you were?
Probably 6.
Yeah.
I had a grandfather who was like Doc Brown in a basement where we tinkered. And by the time I was 7, he had taught me how to solder somebody's glasses in a pipe joint and the light of a blowtorch and how to complete a circuit. And so I lived the dream in the basement of my grandparents' house.
Wow. I think, you know, we see, and I'm sure you've seen this, Elizabeth, a lot of in that younger age, right, where there's that excitement and sometimes they know even what type of science they might want to go in. And somehow that gets lost as they get a little bit older. Not in all kids, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, Chris kept it his whole life. But what happens? What do you think happens there?
I think, you know, like I said, with the college kids, I feel like they think that there's like a right answer or a right way. And if they don't, if that's not easy, then they move on. So I think it's there's just at some point we just kind of lose that just natural, like, follow what you're interested in.
Yeah. I think, again, we're lucky where we are because if anybody's visited the science fair, the annual science fair, I am just blown away at some of the stuff these kids come up with.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's wonderful to be here. But I think that a parent can help and coach their kids as scientists with any background. I mean, you just have to be a sounding board, you know, and maybe help them, you know, along the way. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you need a background in science. I don't think you need a museum. I just think you have to be willing to help your kids, you know, formulate and maybe occasionally, you know, pop a question in their heads.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can't tell them and quench their, you know, I was talking to my daughter a couple of days ago because I was like, oh, the electric cars always make me nervous walking because they're so silent. And I said, oh, why do you think they're so silent? And then my daughter just went off on this tangent about they had extra pillows in the back of the car. And, you know, I'm not going to go out there and draw the schematics for an internal combustion engine. I'm just going to let her ride.
Yeah.
And that's what parents have to do. You know, occasionally pop some questions in there and just enjoy the ride.
Yeah. I know sometimes as parents, you know, we get busy and we have to kind of think, I know sometimes my guys will be asking a lot of questions. I'm like, why are you asking so many questions? He goes, you say it like it's a bad thing. And I have to go, remind myself, yes, okay, it's not. It's a good thing, right? You want to ask questions. You want to be curious. Many times a scientist's work requires them to narrow their focus and study one particular thing intensely. In contrast, this book reminds us how broad and simple science can be. Chris, did writing the book make you think differently about your path as a scientist or how you approach your own research?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, while I was writing this, there was a part in which I was talking about, you know, being wrong is okay. And I keep thinking about my favorite research projects were always the ones where I had a lot of trouble. And then eventually it came around. So my favorite research project was the one that I had the hardest time in the lab. And so the patience and the perseverance made it sweet when I solved it.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was a lot of work, and you did it.
Oh, yeah. It would have been fine if I didn't, yeah. but because I still learned a lot of tricks in the lab trying to figure that out. But the fact that it was a victory. It was awesome. Yeah.
There are so many fun and simple science projects for kids, ones that don't even require many materials. What are some of your favorites? Chris, I'll start with you and then ask you, Elizabeth.
Mine is just walking around. Why does somebody's house on one side, the blue is faded? I can't help myself looking at people's recycling bins and asking about, without looking into somebody's background, but just looking and why does this sound differently? So there's no doubt that I've done the baking soda and vinegar, but I'm much more of in the moment, walking around, living laboratory free, walking on the beach and picking things up and asking my kids, do you think this came from somebody sitting on the beach or do you think it came from a boat offshore?
Elizabeth?
Something that just popped in my mind recently is that for the last 2 years, we've had our school has given each classroom, if they wanted, caterpillars that will turn into butterflies in our nets. And then we have a day where we go outside and we release them. And it's just great having that happen in our library and having the kids every day checking in, like what's happening, having that live experience for them, basically. So,
anything you want to add, Chris?
No, but that I can only underscore the fact that those kids were excited because it mattered to them, and they did it on their own terms, and that wisely the school system has afforded the luxury of finding something that they likely will know will work. It's wonderful.
And just letting kids explore their own curiosity, whatever that is. And it seems that kids always seem, young kids especially, are very like the whole natural world, the rocks, the shells. I mean, I can't tell you in preschool, you remember this, Chris, but our boys went to preschool together and the rocks, they'd come home in the pockets of rocks and you're like, no, don't throw those out. Right.
We actually had to buy extra rock and minerals books this year because we had so many kids interested and they're showing me, they're making up all these stories and like where it came from. This is a super rare, and I'm like, oh, okay, wow. Yeah.
Good thing you don't have any moon rocks. Big fights over that. All right. Anything you want to add before we let you go?
No, I just want all these kids and their parents to have fun and encourage them to talk and think and ask questions and be safe.
Elizabeth, anything you want to add?
That the same.
Have a great summer. All right. We're going to post a link to Christopher Reddy's book, A Kid's Book About Science, at our website, capeandislands.org. Christopher Reddy, oceanographer at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, and Elizabeth Doe, librarian at Mullenhall Elementary School in Falmouth. Thanks so much for coming in, and thanks for doing the book, Chris.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Thank you. Coming up after break, keeping kids engaged with reading during the summer vacation. Stay with us. You're listening to The Point. Summer vacation is here, and while there's debate about how much a long break impacts kids' academic performance, what's not debated is the importance of reading, either on break or in school. We're going to spend the remainder of the hour discussing how to keep kids, even reluctant ones, engaged in reading over the summer. With us, Mary Cronin, K-2 literacy coach at Marguerite Small Elementary School in Yarmouth, where it is the last day of school. Hi, Mary.
Hi, it's a lot of excitement here for the last day of school.
And our phone number is 866-999-4626 if you'd like to tell us some tips on how you're keeping your kids engaged. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Mary, let's start with the preschool children. We know that reading aloud, even to infants, has long been encouraged. Talk about why that's important at a very early age.
Well, if you picture a triangle that you could draw between a caregiver, parent, an infant or a toddler, and a book, that's like the sacred space of learning the joy of reading. So even before children are making sense of letters or words, what they're hearing is the voice of someone they love reading, and that sense of closeness. And literally, if a child is on your lap while you're reading, they're feeling your breath, they're hearing the hum of your voice, and it creates a bond with the concept of reading, and that books are good, and in a sense, books equal love.
What are some of your favorite read aloud books for young children?
Well, there's a lot. I love so many of them. I often will turn to, for very young children, a lot of fun alphabet books. And when we get to kindergarten, we've been doing a lot of reading across different cultures at ME Small School. So we recently had an author come who's a Brazilian American author named Ana Crespo. And she's written several picture books that are either set in Brazil or they're set in Massachusetts with Brazilian American children. So there's a little bit of Portuguese sprinkled in the stories, and they're very fun and very engaging. And Anna came to our school in March for 4 days and visited every single classroom for a writer's workshop. And her book, one of her most loved books, is called The Sock Thief. And that's about a little boy who borrows socks from the neighbors to make a soccer ball. And then there's a very enchanting book that she's just written called Saudade, which is a Portuguese word meaning you're missing something or you're longing for something. And it's about a girl and her mom on basically a nature walk, and they talk about what they miss about Brazil, but what they love about where they live now. And that, I feel like, is a very universal message for people who miss loved ones who are far away. And that could apply to anyone of any culture. So that's a very recent example in our school.
I was gonna say, and you mentioned culture books. They're so important and so much easier to find now, right? I mean, we used to be difficult to find books of different cultures, but we're getting a lot more of those in all over in different schools, libraries, et cetera.
Exactly. And I think the publishing industry has really changed in that regard, and that they also understand the importance of giving children a very diverse set of experiences around their reading. So another author that we had visit recently at ME Small is named Valerie Bolling. She's a Black author who's a retired educator, and all of her books feature Black families doing joyful, fun, and physical things. There's one called Together We Swim. There's one called Together We Ride, about a little girl learning how to ride her bike. And again, really joyful, very diverse, and yet with like a universal message about the joy of family.
What are some activities we can do to engage young kids as we read books aloud?
Well, besides reading with feeling and emotion, there's also that what I really believe is important is that the reading experience doesn't end when the book is closed. Just like we talk to our grown-up friends about, oh, this reminds me of a certain song, this reminds me of a certain movie. If we do that with books, with young children, oh, look at that seagull. That reminds me of the story we read about such and such, that you're always reflecting back on the books that you've read. It communicates this message that reading is just a very rich part of our life that's sort of woven into everything we do. It doesn't end when the story time is over.
Even before children can read or write, they might have a vivid imagination and an inclination to verbalize elaborate stories or fantasies. How can we help capitalize on this? And is there evidence that cultivating verbal storytelling will help with writing skills later in life?
Absolutely, because when you have a good sense of story with beginning, middle, and end, that lays the groundwork for very rich writing later in a child's development. I can also remember the period of time, for example, when my daughter was a young reader and she would turn all the pages and narrate the story. It had nothing to do with the words on the page, although she did understand they were familiar books. She understood the story. And some people might say, oh, you're not reading, let me read the words to you. But letting a child do that narration, again, is giving them a sense of ownership over the story. And that really feeds imagination and early literacy skills.
One of the things I used to do when my daughter was young is we didn't even use a book. We'd say, all right, I'd start the story once upon a time, and then she would take a part, and then I would take a part, and we would create a story.
And build one together. So that would be an amazing experience. And then you could actually try to put it on paper together, and the grown-up could write the words, and the child could illustrate, and you have your own storybook.
There you go. As children get older, picture books can also be a place where kids see themselves reflected in the characters of the story. For example, it might be a story that features a family with two mothers or characters that look like them. How have you seen children's books evolve over the past decade to be more inclusive?
Oh, this is a question that's very close to my heart as a lesbian parent, because I was always looking for those books when our daughter was growing up. There's actually a new book out now that I really love. It's called Rainbow Allies, by Nancy Chernin. It's a children's book. And it's based on a true story of something that happened in Massachusetts, that there was a lesbian couple living in town and someone ripped down their rainbow flag and threw eggs at their house. And the kids in the neighborhood were very upset by that. So they decided to band together and take matters into their own hands. And they went around to all the neighbors and asked them to fly rainbow flags on their houses as a measure of support. So this is something that came from children and from their own sense of justice and equality. So that's a great example. Another one is there's a book called Molly's Tuxedo about a little girl. It's school picture day, and all she wants to do is wear her brother's little pint-sized tuxedo for a picture day, and her mother wants her to wear like a very puffy, floofy dress. So how does she resolve that? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get into any gender language or anything except a sense of what you feel comfortable in, what you want to wear, and where you want to wear it. Mm-hmm. Another great conversation starter. Yeah. And then I often think about kids who have, maybe they live with a single parent, their parents don't live together. And there's a book that I read recently called Across the Bay by Carlos Aponte, and set in Puerto Rico. And again, very universal. It's a boy, a little boy who lives with his mother and grandmother, and he longs for his father. So he goes looking for his father and ends up deciding that he didn't find his father, but he's perfectly happy with the way that his family is just now, and he feels loved and secure. So I feel like if you describe any kind of family configuration to a librarian, they will come up with a bundle of titles for you to bring home and
Absolutely.
Enjoy.
Yeah. And then we have a lot of grandparents raising grandkids now, and there's books that talk about that, or even like the books with animals. Well, you know, kids seem to relate so well to animals, the animal stories. They can sort of envision those same themes of, you know, love and family, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
What are your thoughts on audiobooks for kids? With the right narrator, they can be very engaging. Should we be concerned if our children only want to listen to books and not read?
No, because that's giving them a really powerful foundation in rich language. And again, the structure of story, when you're integrating the structure of story, beginning, middle, end, character development, conflict, those are all things that we learn in kindergarten. Those are all things that we're learning in first grade. The bones of a story. A child will learn that through an audiobook as well as through an actual book in their hands. Hmm.
Schools and libraries often have competitions or activities to get kids reading more books. In your experience, what are some of the activities that work best, especially for those kids who might be more reticent to read?
So I have strong feelings about giving kids a lot of autonomy, especially in the summer, about what they read. Because let's face it, 10 months of the year, we're bossing them around and telling them what to do, right?
Yeah.
So for 2 months, let's give them the opportunity to choose whatever books they like, whether we think they're worthy or not, whether they think they're, you know, you're too old for that or not. So what I call this is the joy of going down a rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. So if you give a child a chance to say, I really love this author, I want to read every book by this author, or I love baseball, let's go find all the books about baseball. There are so many ways that children can take control of their reading life, and then they feel that joy because they're steering the ship.
Yeah.
And I really feel like summer's the time to do that.
It's funny, my grandson and I recently read The Trumpet Swan by E.B. White, because I was like, oh, that's an E.B. White book I wasn't really familiar with. And it was a little bit more advanced than his reading ability, but so we read it. I read it to him and we talked about it together. It was just a wonderful story and something that he really identified with. And it's enjoyable, and I think on both ends. I think, you know, you think, oh, I'm reading this kid's book, but there are some just really great stories that are just as entertaining to the adult readers as it is to the kids.
Absolutely. So that reminds me of something also that I'm a big fan of, which is biographies. So there's a wonderful children's biography about E.B. White.
Oh,
and if I can remember the author's name, I'll try to come up with it. But biographies, when I was growing up, were kind of in that dusty shelf on the library that nobody much gravitated towards unless you were doing a school project.
Right.
They are completely different now. They are vivid, fun, picture books in many cases that tell the story of a person's life and will really kind of knock your socks off. Yeah. So I read one about Nichelle Nichols, who was the Black woman who starred in Star Trek.
Yes.
And how she was a kind of a pathfinder in terms of, you know, representation on television, her own scientific background, what she did during the civil rights movement. Then there's one about Rita Moreno and being in West Side Story and growing up very poor in Puerto Rico and coming to New York. There are so many different great biographies that I think that's a wonderful way to help kids, again, learn about people who might be kind of like them in some ways and went on to do great things.
And there's that great series of kids' books, Who Was? Who Was? And it has everybody you can think of, whether it's sports people, politician, actors, inventors, you name it, right?
Absolutely. Those are incredible.
Yeah.
I just thought of the person's name. So it's called Some Writer, The Story of E.B. White. Ooh. By Melissa Sweet. Illustrations, I mean, as an adult, I've pored over these illustrations because there are things written in the margins and little details everywhere. And you learn a lot about why he wrote the stories he wrote and why he loved the stories that he wrote. Fantastic.
Yeah. We're talking about keeping kids engaged with reading during the summer vacation. We'd love to hear from you. If you are a librarian and have some kind of summer program that's, for kids reading, give us a call, 866-999-4626. Or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about keeping kids engaged with reading during the summer vacation. With us is Mary Cronin, K-2 literacy coach at M.E. Small Elementary School in Yarmouth. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Just a little plug here for libraries. Most of the libraries have some kind of really interesting summer program for kids. I know last year here in Woods Hole, they had a little calendar and you put down what you read every day. And for each week you read, you got this badge. Well, my grandson was very excited about those badges, actually mentioned it on our way to Woods Hole this morning saying, oh, are they doing, but they're not doing the, we're going to go over and see what they're doing this year. I know they're not doing the badges, but check in with your local library because there might be something that's just totally exciting to your little ones. Talk about ways to introduce kids to different genres and why that's so important.
Sure. And this goes right along with your library conversation. So one of the things that I love to do is it started during the pandemic, but I still do it now, which is I use my library card to request books. So I will go online and say, oh, I need books about a certain topic. And I kind of hit, request. And then 3 days later, I stop by the library. They're all stacked up for me. I buzz in, pick up my 3 or 4 books at Brooks Free Library in Harwich, and then I'm out the door again. So any parent and caregiver can also do that. So it streamlines this whole process. So if you notice, for example, that your child loves horses, you can then go online on the Clams and find fiction books about horses. There's a wonderful new picture book called My Daddy is a Cowboy by Stephanie Seals.
She's wonderful. We had her on. Yes. Can I just say, the illustrations in that book will blow your mind. Blow your mind. It's amazing. Yeah. That's a great book.
And Stephanie's language is beautiful. The whole book is beautiful. So if my child loves that book, then I'm going to go online and look at nonfiction books about horses. And I'm also going to check the poetry section because there are often poetry books about almost any topic you can imagine. And then I'll put that bundle together and have that at home. So that way they get comfortable in all these different genres of nonfiction, more informational style books, poetry, and story picture books.
One of the things my grandson's very interested in is history. And he started out with the I Survive books.
They're great.
They take a real event in history. Of course, the story is fiction around an event. It took him a while to figure out that actual boy or girl in the story was not real, but the event was real. And now he has moved on to Nathan Hale's Hazardous Tales, which he is loving. and these are graphic novels. Graphic novels have really taken off in the last five to 10 years, even for adults. Should we be concerned if our kids or tweens are only reading graphic novels and not longer format fiction or nonfiction?
No, for the same reason that I mentioned before. Your goal over the summer as a parent, caregiver, is to have a happy reader who's devouring the pages of a book. That's your number one goal. So if I have a child who's solely interested in graphic novels all summer long, fine, go at it. Because guess what? Graphic novels are actually, in some ways, a more complex way of reading. There's a lot of information packed on each page. There's a ton of visual information as well as language. There's a lot of very sophisticated things going on with sequencing and point of view. So that's feeding a child's reading life in a different way, and in some ways, a more sophisticated way. Yeah. So I don't worry about graphic novels at all.
Yeah. It's funny, I'm just thinking back. It's like a magical moment when that all clicks, you know, when a kid's into a story and it just comes to life, right? And I still remember what as a kid for me, Charlotte's Web. I still remember that was like the book that I went, wow, you can escape to this other world, right? And what age do you think that reality of what a book means comes to kids? About how old are they, do you think?
Do you mean when a child kind of slips into another world?
Yeah. Because, I mean, I guess the younger kids, fantasy is reality to them, right? So, so for them, you know, fantasy is possible. But as you get a little bit older, you realize fantasy isn't reality, but you get it in a book.
Yes. As soon as independent reading takes hold, really, mm-hmm. and they're having their own private experience with a story, that's when that magic really happens.
What are your thoughts about journaling as a way to engage kids in writing? And are there are ways to encourage kids to keep a journal?
I think some children, it really depends on the child. So there are some children who are very averse to writing and they've maybe attached some negative connotations to it. So if we're talking about the summer context, would make it very open-ended and perhaps focus it. So if I have a child, for example, who's become obsessed with a topic, let's say it's horses, I might say, how about if you make a little book about everything that you've learned about horses? And that way they can draw on what they've read. I might have also brought them to a place that has horses, or they might have gone horseback riding or just watched them. So I try to feed their writing with other experiences outside the book. Mm. And then that can lead to writing.
One of the things too, I was mentioned, my grandson's into history, and in particular, battleships and military. Mm. And so he draws lots of pictures of battleships, makes lots of Legos and things like that. But the books that he's put together, which he likes to, is they're more illustrations than anything else.
Yes.
And then he will ask, you know, how to spell certain things. And so there is some writing, but but it's a start, right? I mean, it's a start and he staples them together and he creates these
Absolutely.
Stories. Yeah. Yeah.
So I saw a great example of this in first grade a couple of years ago at the end of right around this time of year. It was late May. It was in June because I remember I started with Flag Day and we had studied, you know, the U.S. flag and the number of stripes and the number of stars, etc. And then we went on to a whole week long study of flags. We got flags all over the world, flags from different countries. We got books. We had atlases. We had little encyclopedia books, children around the world. It just kept growing and growing. And every child in that class made a book about flags.
Oh, wow.
Whatever it meant. For some, it was a survey of many flags. For one, it was a flag about a country they felt particularly attached to. And we have a beautiful garland all around the lobby of our school that has the flags all over the world. We went on a scavenger hunt. They all had clipboards. They were looking for their favorite flags. You could do something like that at home because we see flags everywhere. Right. And it became sort of like a social studies / history / culture that was very fun and really was fed by their enthusiasm.
Right. Let's talk to Dave, who's giving us a call from Orleans. Hi, Dave.
Morning.
Morning.
So I had a few things here. So when I was young, we would earn TV time and video game time, as probably many did, by, you know, we would read for an hour and we could maybe watch TV or do a video game for a half hour or 20 minutes. So it's not a one-to-one, mm-hmm. you know, and you want to, and that way, if there's a program on later, you can get that reading time in potentially earlier, bank that, and sort of get a little, and I mean, I love to read, so that didn't backfire. We would write invitations to our friends for sleepovers and like plan out all sorts of fun things that we would want to do. So that's sort of, you know, in terms of that writing development.
Yeah.
And just encouraging them to write. And, you know, it's summer, middle of the hot day. You know, grandparents maybe want to have a nap. It's a nice quiet time to get that reading in to earn that TV or video game later on, rather than sit out and grab a sunburn,
right.
You know?
Wow.
It's like, even a day like today, I'm out here, you know, I'm getting a sunburn. I'd like to sit in the shade and read.
Dave, those are great suggestions, Dave. Thank you. Thank you for that call. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, earning the TV and video game time by how much you're reading. I do know I have friends who, instead of like, you know, kids outgrow the nap time, but they call it quiet time and you can sit and read, right?
So yes, that's always, yes, and, works too.
And if you start that young, you don't get, you know, the pushback when they get a little bit older and you go, okay, it's quiet.
That's
time.
Right.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite books, middle grade students? And what do you see most popular books for that age group?
So one of the concepts about middle grade that I wanted to mention in terms of the biographies is that one of the genres that's really growing is called collective biographies. So like Brave Girls, and it'll have, you know, a profile of 25 girls who did brave things. So it's just like one page on each person. So there's a book that I love called No Voice Too Small, and each page has a poem and then a little explanatory paragraph about a kid who became an activist about something. Whether it was about climate or whether it was about fairness or whether it was about race issues or anything at all, kids taking action. So that's one area that I love in middle grade. Another one is the nonfiction in middle grade is really growing. Mm-hmm. I just read a middle grade called Enigma Girls, and it's history. It's set during World War II, and it's about the girls who were in their late teens and some in their early 20s who are living in England, who were drafted to become code breakers and trying to crack all the codes of the Germans during World War II, and how they were kind of sequestered. They weren't allowed to talk about what they were doing. They couldn't tell their families. Phenomenal. So if you have a girl or a boy in your life who loves math or STEM kind of topics, it would be an incredible book for them.
Fascinating story, yeah.
Yeah. And then I love Lauren Wolk, of course, who's from Cape Cod.
Everything she writes, yeah. She's fabulous.
Beyond the Bright Sea, I just thought was phenomenal. You know, set on Cuddy Hunk, perfect, beautiful middle grade character who has, you know, a lot of conflict and takes a lot of action and is on a quest and just phenomenal.
And by the way, her books are like called young adult. They're adults will love these books as well. Yeah, she's an amazing writer.
Yes, yes.
Years ago, we had Harry Potter series that got kids across the world engaged in reading. Have there been series of books that really engaged kids in the same way?
I think not in that same blockbuster category, but I think there are authors that kids follow. For example, Kwame Alexander is a great example.
Oh, he was just at the Nantucket Book Festival. He is amazing. Yeah. And I know he's visited
amazing.
Many schools around here. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, I had a wonderful experience with a student from Emmy Small who's a big Kwame Alexander fan. And we, you know, we showed up at the same reading when he was at the Cultural Center. And this boy named Lucas got his book signed. And, you know, I just loved watching a kid idolize and follow an author. And I think Kwame Alexander is a great example of that with The Crossover and of course his other books. And the other one is The New Kid. And that is also, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting the author's last name, Jerry, The New Kid. That is a book that just sort of, Jerry Craft. kind of follows a boy who goes to a fancy private school. And he's a child of color and kind of navigates all these different things about sort of the socioeconomics and race and how comfortable are you in a new setting. And it's a perfect middle grade book. So there's a lot of kids who love Jerry Craft and will read anything. And that's a graphic novel. We'll read anything that Jerry Craft writes.
Yeah. In certain parts of the country, we're seeing movements to ban books from schools and libraries. How do you recommend talking with kids about banned books? And is there a potential to use banned books as a way to engage reading?
Yes, most definitely. Because I think that banned books, the people who suffer from banned books are schools, because that's where the stranglehold takes place, and also libraries to a degree. But families have complete and utter total freedom to read what they want with nobody telling them what they can and cannot read. So to me, that would be a perfect opportunity to say, some people think that this book isn't appropriate for kids your age. Let's read it, and I want you to tell me what you think.
Okay, right there, when you say it's
And real.
inappropriate, they're going to go, okay, I want to look at
Right.
that.
Let's dig down into this and say, what is it about this book that bothers them? Why do you think it bothers them? Maybe it shouldn't be banned. Maybe more people need to read it.
Young adult books are geared toward junior high and high schoolers, and these books can deal obviously with more adult topics. Do you see adolescents who may not have found a love of reading in younger grades get hooked by a book because the topic resonates with their experience? And then how do we help them find these types of books?
I think at that point, it's really about peer group, as with everything with adolescents, that our influence as adults starts receding a little bit, and the peer group becomes more and more significant. And that's where books are passed around and recommended among friends. And I think that's where a lot of kids get their reading recommendations. And then there's a lot of YA, you know, young adult websites. I also love that libraries will have that young adult section sort of set off on its own so that those teens feel like, okay, this is our place. I'm not with the kid books anymore. I'm over here on this side or in this room or in this corner of the library. And I think that's really powerful too. And the other thing, of course, is librarians are great at recommending. And whatever they put on the top of a shelf, face out, is a winner.
And I should say, you know, for people who don't have kids or grandkids looking for books for nieces and nephews, I can remember, all kids have, they have a different interest, right? I can remember going into Eight Cousins and saying, I'd have a niece, she's this old, she likes this type of book. Every single time it was a hit. The librarians and the local bookstore folks, even if you just have an idea of what the child might be interested in, and maybe if you don't, you just say, hey, this child is this year's old in this grade, they've
Yes.
always come up with the best recommendations, right?
Absolutely. And I use my librarian for that too.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just
Absolutely.
about a minute left. I guess what we'd want to emphasize is let them pick what they want to read, right?
Give them autonomy and freedom in the summer. We want them to feel that spark of joy more than anything else. That's what builds strong readers.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, sometimes the school libraries, when they are done with the books, I always am interested in the choices that Jackson brings home. Recently, he brought home Firebirds, which is about birds that live in the West, in, you know, where forest fires have happened. It was very interesting. And a
Ah.
book about building the pyramids.
Oh, I love
Learned
it.
something in both. And I said, why did you pick this book with the fibers? He goes, I thought it looked interesting. Yeah, so there you go.
He's a nonfiction person.
Very much so, yeah.
I love that.
Mary Cronin's K-2 literacy coach at Emmy Small Elementary in Yarmouth. Mary, thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it. Have a great summer.
Thank you very much.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.